This is the InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast recorded Wednesday, January 21st, 2009. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, ECAC Hockey senior writer and podcast moderator, joined by three other Inch staffers tonight. We'll start on the East Coast with our Hockey East senior writer, Jeff Howe. Good evening, Jeff.
How's it going, Gladdy?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Good. Just want you to know I'll never let a podcast get in the way of continuing my NHL 09 season.
Attaboy. Video games are crucial to development of the mind and body.
That's right.
That's right. Also, Inch columnist Mike Idlebus and editor Mike in Central Michigan. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Just to follow up on that theme, I absolutely nailed No Doubt's spider webs on the hard level of Guitar Hero tonight.
Attaboy. Attaboy. And finally, WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. Hello, Jess.
Hi, guys. Since we're on this theme, I'll just say that my legs are a little sore. I've been doing a lot of Wii skiing lately. And,
Wii skiing.
That's a surprising workout. It's amazing. I mean, maybe I'm just a fat guy who doesn't do anything, so, yeah. Going to the fridge gets me winded.
You retire quickly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Claude Lemieux would be very ashamed.
Right after the warm milk and the mid-afternoon nap, there's nothing like a little wee skiing.
That's nice. That's nice.
Is the afternoon around 11 a.m. for you?
Yeah. I got to get the early bird special, you know.
Walk around the mall a little bit.
A lot of mall walking.
Right.
Four o'clock dinner.
I got to say, not to get too far off talk, we'll have deterioration preview here, but my parents are retired now and live in Arizona in the winter in one of those communities where everybody's retired and they all live in double-wide trailers and drive golf carts. From talking to them, it's like college again. Like, there's like two keggers a day.
Nice.
Because everybody's got unlimited time and nobody has to get up in the morning for anything, and you got time to kill. Why not? So they golf and drink beer like full time now.
And we all have something to look forward to.
That's right, absolutely.
That's why you work.
Eliminate.
Next time you don't want to get out of bed to go to work in the morning, think about drinking beer in Arizona.
Eliminate the golf and I'm in.
Well, golf's not a requirement.
Cut out that fluff.
No, it isn't.
Isn't it anything about getting out of bed to go to work in the morning?
Or the afternoon, or whatever it might be. My latest video game conquest is tearing apart old Nintendo games on a virtual Nintendo website I found. I cleared what? The level 20 of Dr. Mario, so that was big. It's a big move.
I've played those. Those are cool.
They're awesome. Video games are cool. Okay, let's talk about college hockey. I guess that's why
video games were cool, and you weren't.
Yeah. Pro wrestling, Amazon, nasty.
Guy, chew your head.
Absolutely.
Chew your head right off.
Absolutely. Jess, let's start out with the, news of the week, or news since we've last podcasted, which was the WCHA expanding its... I shouldn't say that. The WCHA considering expanding its membership and opening the application process for schools that would possibly like to join that league.
Correct.
What do you think?
I'll paraphrase it by saying we're not going to go home with Bemidji State, but if you want to buy us a drink, we'll talk.
Yeah.
At least not right now. This was done basically to consider Bemidji State.
Of course.
They need a place to go. They're centrally located in the middle of about five WCHA teams. And interestingly enough, they need 8 votes to get in, and it sounds like they've got about 5. So as of right now, it doesn't look like they would get in if the vote was held today, but the vote is not held today. It's going to be held sometime in April. As much as it it's about Bemidji State, though, it's got to be about another team, too, because you can't just, you know, you can't become an 11-team league. You have to become a 12-team league. So knowing that Bemidji State is going to apply and they're making the big push because they're going to need a conference to play in, the big question for a lot of us is, who's number 12 then?
You're right.
And I floated some ideas last week, like Omaha, which was immediately shot down by Mike Kemp at last Friday's Blue Line Club meeting up in Fairbanks. He made it clear that they like where they're playing and they're not going anywhere. I also floated the idea that Michigan Tech could maybe go back to the CCHA, and I got a real, not terse, but making it very clear kind of email within like just a couple hours of my notebook being posted on the web from Jamie Russell, their coach, saying nobody at Michigan Tech is talking about the CCHA. And interestingly enough, you know, he kind of scoffed at the notion that it makes geographic sense for them because they're a lot farther than...
Oh, yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah. They're in Michigan, yes, but they're a lot farther from, say, Ann Arbor than they are from St. Cloud.
Right, right.
So...
it's like all the Youpers, you know, up there who are Packer fans, like, why don't you cheer for the Lions? Well, the Lions are 9 hours from where I live, and the Packers are
two.
Right. So, yeah.
Plus they
stink. Surprisingly enough, though, they all cheer for the Red Wings instead of the Wild, I noticed.
Front runners.
Pistons instead of the Timberwolves.
Is it because the Red Wings actually try to score goals in a game?
Yeah, no, there's that. I think it's Conklin fever is what I think it is.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah. Well, look where that'll get you in the third period.
So, you know, on the topic
number
of this,
12?
The 12th team. The
Northern
two most
Michigan?
Interesting ones I've heard, Northern Michigan, I've heard, is either been approached about applying or is talking about applying. And I got that from the folks at Michigan Tech, too, which Michigan Tech would obviously like that to give them a neighborhood rival in the league again.
Yeah.
I talked to Dave Shiak about this last Saturday. Dave, of course, was a Northern Michigan alum and was an assistant coach there for years before taking over at Alaska Anchorage. And he made it clear that when they left to go to the CCHA, it was a decision made by the school's administration, not by the school's athletic department, and definitely not by the hockey department.
Right.
You know, Rick Comley said at the time he didn't want to leave, but it was out of his hands, and they did leave, and they've been competitive, if not, you know, they haven't excelled in the CCHA, but they've been fine in that league. So that's one. Another real intriguing one that I heard, real interesting, and this would open up a whole big can of worms, but the University of British Columbia has made overtures about being interested in joining the WCHA and joining American College Hockey. What are your thoughts on that one?
I like it.
I love it. I think that would be outstanding for the WCHA. I mean, it would be great for recruiting, no question about that.
You think, oh man, if they hit the BCHL,
yeah.
North Dakota would hate that. They'd hate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Want to know who else would hate it? Picture this, tuning into ESPN to watch the Frozen Four Championship game between the BC Thunderbirds and the Toronto Varsity Blues.
UBC versus UT, nice.
Yeah. How many viewers do you think they'd get in, say, Arkansas, to pick a state at random for that one?
Right. Hey, well, you know what,
the same as they get every other year.
Same as they get in Arkansas when BC and Michigan play.
Right. No, but I think that's...
let's get crazy here, Bus. You may be going the same direction I am here. But let's say BC, Alberta, and... Bemidji. Let's say it's three teams or four teams come in. Yeah, throw in Manitoba, Winnipeg, something like that.
Yep.
So would the WCHA be a 14-team league? Would it be happy about that? Would it go to divisions? It would have to.
Yeah, I think it would have to if you got that big. And I don't know that. You know, I don't know that they're prepared to expand, you know, at that rate.
Not much.
But the other thing that, I mean, this brings into play this, you know, this is something that happened last year where the NCAA said that they would, you know, consider applications for membership from Canadian schools. And,
yeah.
You know, and at the time there was talk about UBC coming in, or maybe a Simon Fraser, which is also right there in the Vancouver area, I think in Burnaby actually. And then obviously, you know, University of Calgary, University of Alberta, a lot of good teams out there in the West and you know, a ton of clubs in the East too. You know, granted there would be a financial consideration in joining those leagues. But I mean, I would be all for it. You know, I don't.
You mentioned Calgary. I was waiting for Gladys to call them my dinos.
No, I've got.
No?
I've got one team that I'm loyal to, or two or three.
But not the dinos. But, you know, the other thing.
My Huskies are my longstanding, and my Rams.
Yeah.
Those are my teams.
You know. You know, the other thing about British Columbia, I mean, obviously it's a huge city. You know, the kind, how that would play out in the media there, I can't answer that question. You know,
what would that be like?
I'm sure they're a blip on the radar, but, you know, they're getting a new arena there on campus in conjunction with the Olympics. So they're going to have, you know, they're going to have a big building.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they're a blip on the radar, though, but does it change it if, you know, Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, you know, if these teams are coming to town?
I think it does I think it can in the sense that, you know, you're going to see some prospects coming in there, some NHL kid, you know, NHL draft picks coming in there.
That's true.
And I think people would be curious to take a look at a, you know, this is just, obviously this is going back a few years, but do you think they'd draw some fans if Phil Kessel came up to play in Vancouver?
But even
team.
More than that, what
or
about
a Danny
Travis,
Heatley or a
Travis Zajac, Danny Heatley, Kyle Turris,
Jonathan Toews,
John Toews. I mean,
right.
Those kids who came out of there. I mean,
right.
In the first place.
Yeah,
If BC comes to visit with Corey Schneider in goal, you think a few Canucks fans would come out and see that?
Yeah, after the first round pick, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's something that could work, and I don't know how serious UBC is, and I don't know how serious the WCHA is, but that would be, I think that would be a pretty bold move. I think that would be wonderful.
It might work. It might work. We'll wait and see what happens about that.
Not to drag it on too long, but I just wanted to mention too. I read this in a pretty good Western College Hockey blog, but apparently Mike Kemp, you know, part of the reasoning, and again, everybody talks about Nebraska Omaha making geographic sense to be in the WCHA because it's located, you know, halfway between Denver and Minneapolis, and you can make that argument. Kemp made a real interesting argument though too about kind of their fan base. Saying that, you know, you think Nebraska, it's college football country, you know, the Cornhuskers and all that. So for the fans there, they know Michigan State, and Ohio State. They don't necessarily know a lot about, you know, and Notre Dame. They don't know a lot about Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, especially North Dakota or those teams, even though, you know, Omaha did play. Right. So, you know, for that college football fan base, they're right where they belong.
That's an interesting point. You know, you can even throw in Western Michigan with Nebraska played Western Michigan.
Yeah, the MAC schools, Miami, I mean, yeah.
I mean, there is some familiarity.
And Nebraska Omaha was until just recently in a conference with North Dakota, St. Cloud State, and Minnesota State Mankato, but, you know, Nebraska Omaha football is about ninth fiddle compared to the University of Nebraska, which is
where
most of the
fan loyalties are. Yeah, those 12 Saturdays in the fall, yeah, forget about it.
Yeah.
No, nobody's... Yeah. Nobody's paying attention to any hockey in the state of Nebraska.
Yep.
Jess, let's, I guess, because it seems we always work west to east in this podcast, let's talk about this weekend's big series, which is Denver and North Dakota. Two games at the Engelstad Arena. Two teams that are playing, it seems like, pretty well right now.
Yeah, pretty well. I mean, in Denver's case, they had last weekend off, which I think was good because not only does, you know, it's always good to rest and get a little healthier. But I think there's still kind of a transition or an adjustment going on to life without Tyler Bozak, and, you know, who's going to fit with who and how lines are going to mesh. So that's obviously going to help. I mean, frankly, if you look at their scores, Denver hasn't played great in the last month. You know, a tie with, I think it was Holy Cross, a loss to BU, and then a couple of close games with Michigan Tech. And, you know, on paper, Denver shouldn't have close games with Michigan Tech at home, but, you know, for whatever reason, they did. So obviously a pretty important weekend for them, and kind of one of those rearview mirror weekends for Denver. You know, you go to Grand Forks and win two, the Sewer in your rearview mirror, and you don't, you probably have to worry about them for the rest of the regular season. North Dakota's playing as well as anybody in the country right now. 5-0-1 in their last six. Had kind of a goofy, again, there, here's Michigan Tech again. They had a goofy tie with Michigan Tech last Friday where they were ahead and the Huskies kind of rallied and slowed them down a little bit. But, yeah, a great hockey. And you know, the bad blood, I think, has dissipated a little bit between those two schools, which is probably a good thing that they can just kind of concentrate on hockey
be fun.
I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, everybody's going to deny it, but yeah, we'll see if any gloves hit the ice in the first 4 minutes.
Any helmets come flying off people's heads. Yeah.
Right. We'll see if they put any funny cartoon balloons on the big screen at the Ralph. I heard all about that when Minnesota played up there a couple weeks ago.
Crazy.
That they put, you know, they would show like a Gopher player and then put a caption over his head that said,
cartoon
"Gee, I wish I played for the Sioux." And
I stink, and
wow, that's
things like that.
Edgy.
Yeah.
That's a good
they
song.
Never do that on the video screens at the deck. Oh wait, they don't have.
I wasn't, you know what, hearing about that, I wasn't offended by it, and I could see where it would have some impact, but, you know, I mean, it's like anywhere, you know, you go to Joe Louis Arena for a Red Wings game or any American Hockey League game, and they do those silly kiss cams and show couples in the stands, and then they'll show, like, you know, two guys sitting on the opposing team's bench. It always gets a cheer, you know. It's like, it's not malicious. It's something to fire up the crowd, so whatever.
The best one of those was when, I think it was in Philadelphia, they did that. They showed the Sharks bench with the kiss cam. And Jeremy Roenick leaned over and kissed whoever was next to him. The place went crazy.
JR. Be good.
That's JR.
Good times.
Gotta love him.
Good times. Good times. Well, I'm going to skip over the middle part of the country, the middle part of the college hockey country, and throw it to Rook Howe, who got to see the Boston University Terriers tear apart BC last weekend. How good is BU, Rook?
BU, as I was saying earlier, and I've said it since I saw them that night, is a great, great hockey team, and I don't think they're going to have an issue of peaking too early or anything like that, but this team is built from all the way across the board. I mean, every single player they dress is a very impressive player, and this is a team that I think is a legitimate national contender.
I agree with you. And, you know, I'll step up to the plate on this. I've hammered BU over the last 3 or 4 years saying, why are these guys relevant? Stop talking to me about a team that wins one weekend a year or one Monday night a year, you know, that hasn't been to a Frozen Four in 15 years or whatever. It's close to that, you know. But this year, I think that is a legitimate team. This is a team that has answered the bell. You know, they built an unbelievable arena, the Engelstad of the East, if you want to call it that, in Agganis. They're attracting top-level blue-chip recruits 3, 4, 5 years in a row, and I was wondering why isn't this happening, and now it finally looks like it is.
Yeah, well, I think about 3 years ago, it was John Carty's junior year when they closed it out on like a 19-1-2 run, something like that. That was a team that seemed to be a legitimate contender before they got smoked by BC and Worcester. But this team is absolutely the best team that, you know, I've seen come through BU, at least since I've worked for Inch. the last 2 years at BU that they definitely were teams that you shouldn't have gotten too excited about. I mean, John Curry was a one-man show his senior year. Last year, they really weren't anything to speak of, especially in net. But they've got two good goalies right now, and Kieran Millan is going to be the guy. I was talking to Jack Parker after the game on Saturday night, and he told me that the rotation for the immediate future is basically done with, and Kieran Millan is going to be the goalie. And, you know, Grant Rollheiser, it's nothing against his talent. It's just that Kieran Millan has been so good, and it's such a calming influence. That was the big thing Parker was raving about, is that he compared him to Curry in the sense that, A, he's surprised when another team puts one past him, and B, when it happens, Kieran Millan moves forward like nothing even happened. He's a very, very calming influence. And as a freshman, I mean, you really don't see that in any position, especially goaltenders. So they've got a kid there between the pipes who, you know, could be there for 4 years and might be every bit, if not better, than John Curry was during his time there. And you know, all the way up to the forwards, Colin Wilson is clearly one of the most talented players in the country. If he stays for 4 years, you're looking at a kid who's probably going to win a Hobey Baker. It's good enough to win a Hobey Baker. And they've got a number of different lines. I mean, Jason Lawrence and Brandon Yip and those guys, that class is providing the leadership. I mean, remember how good those kids were as freshmen. They never really materialized into the talent level of a Colin Wilson or a Nick Bonino or guys like that. But, I mean, those guys are now, you know, your second and third line, and that's a deep line chart you've got. And the defense is even more impressive. I mean, Mac Ilroy is having another tremendous year. And Kevin Shattenkirk might be the best defenseman in Hockey East right now. I mean, he's a huge physical presence. He kills kids if you come at him. I mean, he put a kid, a BC kid, flat on his back on Saturday night. I don't think he ever saw him coming. And, you know, the kid who I've always liked watching, Eric Greiba, who is similar in the sense that he'll whack a guy every single night, and you'll wonder how the kid he hit is going to get back up. I mean, really, all the way through, it's a very loaded team, and you obviously aren't going to question anything the coaching staff does either.
13 NHL draft picks on that team. So you know they're getting talent, certainly in terms of college hockey guys and guys that pro teams think a lot of, you know, when their draft year comes around.
One guy's not a draft pick that everybody's talking about is Gilroy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In Sports Illustrated this week, by the way, faces in the crowd. Congratulations to him.
Well, what Gilroy does, Gilroy is sort of the epitome of what that team is very, very good at. I mean, every single one of the defensemen, most of their defensemen are very, very good at moving the puck up very quickly. And that team really gets the thing through the neutral zone very well, and they're able to set up their offense. And with all the weapons that they've got, once they're able to really settle down in the opponent's zone, they're a very dangerous team. I mean, they won 5-2 at BC the other night. If John Muse didn't stand on his head about three or four different times, that game could have been one of the most embarrassing games for Boston College hockey in the last decade. And I mean, they're a very good team. The point I was going to get at about the draft picks, I mean, you could look at a number of different teams, and they could all have a number, you know, up to 10 draft picks, and you wonder how some guys are drafted. I mean, some are purely based on size and quirky things there, and you know there are guys who are going to get drafted, and they're not going to pan out. You can tell that instantly the second that they set foot on campus. But BU has some kids, I mean, Colin Wilson especially, who are going to go to the show, and they're going to be, you know, impact players.
Big-time guys, yeah.
In the NHL.
No, I agree with you on that. Colin Wilson's not going to be around for 4 years, as you were talking about earlier.
Right.
Let's just say that. But he did, Bus, you and I kind of collaborated and threw him into third on our Hobey Tracker this week. I think he's that good. You know, and one of the things I wrote about when the comments section was, you know, this is a guy who's been on our radar, and we always knew he was going to be a top 10 guy for the Hobey, but I think right now we think he could win this thing.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I think that the one thing, or you know, one thing he really has working in his favor, I guess it's a couple of things. You know, first and foremost is that they've got that BU has a number of marquee games remaining. What with the Beanpot and
New Hampshire
East,
this weekend
and New Hampshire and that stuff down the road. The other thing is I don't think we've seen the best of him yet, which is pretty scary. You know, I think that his best performances, you know, we haven't seen the best of him. You know, the kind of dominating performances, you know, as good, we haven't seen him play like he has, like he was in the World Junior Tournament where he was really, really good.
Right.
You know, and I you know, we've kind of, I don't want to get away from the conversation about BU, but, you know, we talked about the Hobie Tracker and kind of how, you know, we've been treading water a little bit trying to come up with three guys, because it seems like the pool is about 20 guys, and you could really slip any of those guys in there and not get an argument.
It's awfully wide and not very deep. You know, it's like
exactly.
There's a lot of guys who are... Yeah,
exactly.
And the thing I like about Wilson's potential in terms of this and also with Ben Scrivens and Ryan Stoa and a bunch of other guys, you know, are that these guys are playmakers. We want guys, and people notice guys and vote for guys, and you only have to look as far back as last year with Kevin Porter and Nathan Gerby. You know, you want guys who make a difference. You want guys who make plays. You want guys who help their teams win and want the puck and make plays in huge situations. And I think Colin Wilson is that kind of a player.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, if he doesn't win, it's because there are so many things that he does do well that it's almost like if he had to be the scorer on BU's offense, or if he had to set up guys and had to be the guy who generated all the points that BU puts up, then, you know, he might run away with the Hobie track. He might run away with the Hobie vote. But, you know, he does so many different things because it's such a balanced team that, you know, he hasn't really had the ability to run away from the pack. I mean, he's got the talent to be a very good and honorable Hobie Baker winner, but I don't know if it's in his makeup or BU's makeup to really push a guy to the front of that class, if you guys know what I mean.
No, I think that's a great point, and I think that another interesting thing about him is kind of, you know, the package that he is epitomizes BU from what I've seen of them this season. You know, obviously he's a very talented player, but he's also a very smart player, and you know, he's not all about finesse. I mean, you know, he's willing to get in there and mix it up. You know, his versatility kind of is on a smaller scale what BU is as a whole, just you know, a team that does not have at this point in time any visible weaknesses.
Right.
And I think it just do a lot of things well. And then I guess on the flip side would be Boston College, I don't want to say we've given up on them, but they're causing us.
I gave up on them.
You gave up on them.
I did.
I'm scratching my head about.
I'm ready to give up on them. You know what? Show me something. Do something.
Yeah.
But hey, you know what? They finished fifth or whatever last year in the national championship. So that's, you can always.
So is there anything wrong with them, Rook, or is it just?
They, and it kills me when I hear this. Jerry York's biggest thing on Saturday night was that they were always a step behind. I mean, I hate that type of a cliche. They're not able to. Their special teams aren't. I mean, I'll go with the cliches. Their special teams aren't very special right now. I mean, they're not doing much. And the thing that I think I noticed about them, and I'll make two points here. The one thing that I was going to say is that I think they really miss Nathan Gerby. And
you think?
There's nothing they can do about that, obviously. But I think Nathan Gerby made up for a lot of deficiencies last season. I mean, BC last season went through, and I looked it up today, it was two streaks when they went winless for at least five games last season, and one of them was directly before they won their final nine in the national championship. But there were a lot of flaws that we saw on that team last year, but we also saw, and I know you guys saw it because they had a lot of nationally televised games, especially with the Bean Pot, that Nathan Gerby could single-handedly change a game all by himself. I mean, he made plays phenomenal. He created goals by himself. He was great on the penalty kill, and they don't have that this season. I mean, Brock Bradford and Ben Ferriero and some of the freshmen, they've got some guys who are very talented scorers, but they don't have the complete dynamic effect that they had last year that I think might have masked some of their deficiencies. The other point that I was going to make has completely escaped me, and I can't remember what it is. So
I agree. Sure. I agree wholeheartedly. No doubt about that.
It's just ironic that they're struggling so much, and Muse, by all accounts, has been better than he was last year.
Yeah. I mean, he was tremendous on Saturday night. He really saved that team from a complete and utter embarrassment.
You know what's funny to me, and you guys can probably, well, you may or may not agree with me, but you're in the same position I am as a college hockey writer, media member. You know, you hear all these things, the same thing year after year about, well, we have to see about our chemistry. We have to see about our leadership. We have to see about our seniors. Listen, you know what? Paul Kariya wasn't a senior at Maine, you know, and Colin Wilson's not a senior at BU, and Phil Kessel wasn't a senior ever in Minnesota. And I just say, you know, yeah. Why do you guys buy into this whole, you know, foolish, you know, baloney about, you know, leadership and senior and experience and all that stuff? But it kind of comes to be true. You never know. You know, you can bring chemistry back, but it just might not be the same. Even taking one guy out of the room or two guys out of the room changes the whole dynamic of a team.
If Phil Kessel was a senior, you think they would have beat Holy Cross that year?
They probably would have beat Holy Cross, yes.
Sorry.
You know what? That point did come back to me. In that last year, the Boston College team that we saw, like I was saying, did have some flaws. But, I mean, there was so much talent there. You saw them. Even they had the early streak when they lost, or they were winless. It was either five or six consecutive games. And then they went on and they won the Bean Pot. And you know, I know they kind of let Harvard back in it because
that was a great game. I don't care.
But you saw BC rise to the challenge and play its best hockey on two nights, and good enough to at least come away with two very good wins in the Bean Pot, first against BU and then against Harvard. And then you saw them hit another lull, and then when the games mattered most again, they came back and they ripped off that nine-game winning streak. They won the Hockey East Championship, and they won the National Championship after they finished fourth in Hockey East in the regular season. I was kind of waiting for BC to snap out on Saturday night against BU because this was a big game. It was with the five-game winless streak after the choke in Lowell the night before, or against Lowell the night before. I really figured this was going to be a team that was going to bounce back, and I think they were definitely outclassed. And when a team like BU is playing that well, it's pretty hard to hang with them. But when you see a team like BC not come out and at least you can't really say that they were ever in the game once it was around halfway old. And how often do you say that about a BC team when it's showing at least a little bit of a sign of desperation?
Oh, absolutely. This weekend, BC hosts Maine for two, and Maine's a team we've talked about a little bit on a podcast, Rook, and you've written a little bit about. That team's gotten better quicker than they probably should have. I mean, as corny as that sounds, but...